Hello, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Rachel, and we're here with Lady Radio today, and I'm here with Paula. It's just the two of us broadcasting to you live from unceded Musqueam territory from the Vancouver UBC campus. So today we are going to be talking about ladies who write. So, Paula, can you tell us a little bit about this interview that we have coming up today?
Oh, like 2 weeks ago on April 27th, I actually went to Emma Talks. I'm going to tell you more about that later. And I ended up interviewing Maneo Mohale, a writer, and she presented her work there. It was so interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm stoked.
Yeah, I'm super excited. So the episode that we're doing today is focused on women who write or ladies who write. So in addition to this talk of Maneo Mohale, who is a writer, we actually included a handful of music that we both enjoy, who is written mostly by Canadian women who are singer-songwriters, which is super cool. And Paula has a super cool story to go with one of the songs, so I'm super excited. To start off today, we're actually going to play a song by a local hip-hop group called Lady Jams. You may know one of the members, Missy D. She's quite popular here around in the station. And we're going to play a song that's unreleased, and it's called All of It by Lady Jams. Oh,
and I really want to stress out that Maneo Mohale, the girl that I'm going to interview later, is one of the band members. It's so exciting. Enjoy.
That's super cool. Okay. See you later. That was All of It by Lady Jams. Hope you enjoy that. And that beautiful, beautiful voice at the end was Maneo. So what better way to follow up that song than with her interview with Paula? So Paula, tell us a little bit about this interview.
I actually wanted to start out with a question to you, Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
What is the thread that connects us?
So I think the threat that connects us, and I'm talking about this from the perspective of being a woman, is the patriarchy. That's the threat that connects us, and that is what I think bonds us together in the fight in feminism, and also just looking at what we are questioning on a day-to-day basis and the things that we're tackling is this sort of construct that is patriarchy that continues to oppress us and affect our everyday lives.
I like that you play with the word threat, because a lot of people connect this positive connection to it. Mm-hmm. And I asked the question because it was part of an interactive installation at the Emma Talks event I went to on April 27th. And the idea of presenting local artists and opening the space for discussion is part of the inclusive concept that Emma Talks provides.
Cool.
Yeah. The series fosters women's voices, including gender nonconforming, two-spirited, trans individuals, and makes their stories accessible to a diverse audience. I'm just going to tell you a little bit more about Emma Talks and how I got to interview Maneo Mohale. In order to make the content even more accessible and to transport the speakers' messages to a larger public, the talks are professionally filmed and published on emmatalks.org. Emma Talks has a policy of mutual aid, which means they support social projects that speakers get to choose, with half of the audience's donations. This gives the featured writers the opportunity to draw attention to initiatives they care for and center topics that are socially marginalized. There's the possibility to donate online on emmatalks.org. The money from the last Emma Talk will be given to Black Lives Matter Vancouver and Sex Workers United Against Violence. Yeah, I had the chance to attend the most recent Emma Talk held by Sarah Hunt and Maneo Mohale. Sarah Hunt is a writer, activist, and educator who is addressing issues related to justice, decolonization, gender, and sexuality. According to the event's website, Sarah's writing has been published in numerous scholarly books and journals, as well as on blogs, and her op-eds featured in such media as The Globe and Mail and CBC Aboriginal. She is assistant professor in First Nations and Indigenous Studies at the Department of Geography at UBC, working and living as a guest in unceded Musqueam territories. In her talk, she spoke about her thoughts on decolonization and told anecdotes about her personal experiences as a two-spirited member of the Aboriginal community. The film material from the event will be available on emmatalks.org soon. Check it out. The other speaker of the night was Maneo Mohale, who I had the pleasure to interview. Mm-hmm. She's living in Johannesburg, actually, South Africa, and her work has appeared in various print and online publications, including Jalada, The Mail and Guardian, and more. She's the 2016 Bitch Media Global Feminism Writing Fellow and writes on various topics, including race, media, queerness, survivorship, language, history, and silliness.
Awesome. Okay, yeah. I'm so excited to hear this interview. So,
yeah, in the following interview, you were just mentioning, Maneo and I are touching on topics like identity, feminism, social discrimination, and privilege, as well as her work as a writer and activist and as a member of the Campus Sexual Assault Support Center at UBC.
Amazing. Okay, so to all you listeners out there, here's Maneo Mohale.
My name is Maneo Rufile Mohale. I'm from South Africa. I'm South African. I was born there. And I'm a bunch of different things, I suppose. And I've done a bunch of different things, but relevant to my talk and my Emma talk that I gave, I'm a writer and a kind of fledgling community organizer as well. Yeah, and a poet. So, but I guess that goes into the writing.
Community organizer, what exactly is that?
Mm-hmm. So I'm involved in different initiatives, and I've been lucky enough to be involved in different initiatives that bring people together. I guess that's like the simplest idea, and movement building and basically giving people space to either talk or debate or have fun or connect to different issues or heal, etc. Yeah.
Sounds amazing. On April 27th, you presented your work Scrutiny of Now at the Emma Talks event. Why did you choose it? What is it about?
It's so funny because I was talking with my partner about what the talk was actually about, and people before the talk, or while I was still writing it, or while I was still trying to find out what direction I wanted to take the talk in, asked, okay, so what is the talk about? And then I asked a few people after the talk, and they all were like, it would be very difficult to kind of encapsulate in one sentence or like a few sentences. But I guess what I was trying to get at, the title comes from an essay by one of my favorite black feminist lesbian writers, Audre Lorde. And from a piece that one essay that she used, that she wrote, and then I used in one of my pieces to talk about a community event called For Black Girls Only. So in the talk, I talk about blackness, I talk about race and the tensions there, I talk about contradictions and music and blues, and I guess I use metaphor and concepts to kind of bring seemingly contradicting ideas together and weave how personally I'm a walking contradiction in many ways.
Who isn't?
Yeah, but also how the society that we live in is seemingly filled with all sorts of contradictions, but I use the metaphor of the blues to kind of hold those dissonances together.
Additionally, you had a collection of poems displayed. Would you want to share your favorite?
Yes, yeah, of course. So this was pretty fun. I'd never collected my poems together in a single anthology or anything like that. And I've always wanted to make my own chapbook, and that's something that like most poets do and my favorite poets do, and I didn't know how to curate and how I would put it together, but it ended up being so simple. And my chapbook, the title is Dust Shake Dance, which is a line in one of my poems called Contra, which I guess will be like appropriate to share now. So this is Contra. Listen to me. This will be no celebration invocation of the words and colors, hues and history so conveniently used by the swollen mouths of my politicians. Listen to me. This will be no joyful, blissful dust shake dance drawn by the distance we feel in that delicious word diaspora. This will be mine, and because of this it will be flawed, this will be mine, and because of this it will be skewed, this will be mine, and because of this I will cloak myself in metaphor and song, because that is all I have ever known how to do. This is not a command, a sassy splash of pith from a conveniently cute black girl. I'm not telling you, I am asking, please, listen to me. Let us begin with the undeniable. The blatant truth that I have grown to have no desire to erase my speech, laced with the inflections of imperialism, clear like a silver knife on crystal, dry like the rewritten pages torn out of beloved books and thrown into the fervent fire of nationalism. Hear me, and you will know. Know of the wordy love I draw deep into me from an inherited language, a learned language, a given language, a language with a hand to cover and smother the one I've had since birth with the tenderness only a lover could know. Empa, hakibatla, nka bua le wena ka sesotho saka. Sesotho saka se roeleng, sesotho saka se snacks, sesotho saka sa josi e ke buang ke sesotho se nyamelang. And if I want, I could speak to you in a language that is mine, in a language that is broken, twisted, bent at fantastical angles similar to those of uprooted jacaranda trees and the thunderstorm. But Manel, No, not that kind of black. As ek wou, ek kon hierdie taal gebruik. Die taal van voetsek en pas op en doen dit nie. Maar ook die taal van granate en liefde en die kind is nie dood nie. I could tell you about arms held and lips kissed in this reluctant rebellion that love has repeatedly gifted me contra color, contra gender. My father sat me down. No, love does not choose. It decides. I have had words flung at me and stuffed in my mouth. Some I've swallowed willingly and believed them as my own. Words like pointed fingers pointing to privilege, pointing to difference, pointing to brilliance, pointing towards and away from beauty. My own fingers reaching and curling for the substance of blackness. But let us end with the undeniable. My skin glows with it. My waist curves with it. My voice hums with it, with the mathematical memory of jazz when I sing Now I am he, and yet thrums with the throw of apartheid shackles when I sing Hou jou hande by mekaar en groei die roes sal bedaar. I am free with it, encamped by it with the claustrophobic closeness of a green-eyed embrace, and so I asked you again that you listen to me, beyond and beneath the cinnamon of my skin.
So beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wow. You just showed us your beautiful voice. Oh. Yeah, I read on the internet that you had a band when you were at UBC, right?
Yes, yeah.
Would you want to tell us about it?
Yes. Okay, so while I was here, I was part of a bunch of different bands, which is kind of cool, I guess. I was very lucky. I was first part of a band with like a very silly name. We had our name was Flow Phonetics, and it was me and a couple of guys, and we played sort of jazzy, funkish, kind of popish, but not really pop, but like that kind of music. And then I went away for the summer and came back, and Flow Phonetics had kind of morphed and grown and changed into something different, and a more improvisational sort of hip hop jazz band called Funk Dirty, and that was super fun as well, and a different vibe, I guess, and that stretched my abilities as a vocalist and to come up with things on the spot and to scat, and that was really fun. I'm trained in like jazz vocals, so that was really fun for me to take part in, and then after Funk Dirty, I was lucky, super, super lucky to meet an amazing group of women, all of them women of color. Missy D, who's a rapper, who's coming out with her new album soon, her own solo album. Just plugging that in, it's amazing. Roya Bennett, who's Persian and amazing, also a vocalist. And then Sejal. Lal, who's like this super amazing violinist. She plays the electric violin and this amazing vocalist at the same time. So we did harmonies with Missy rapping, and that was sort of R&B influenced and with the hip hop kind of rap element. And Missy also, she's a bilingual rapper, so she raps in French as well as English, which is amazing. So we were together and still are, even, you know, across distance, and they're still together, and I'm privileged to kind of be part of that, even if it's from far away.
That sounds so great. Back to your writing. Mm-hmm. What struggles related to your work as an activist or writer are you facing, and have you been facing in the past?
Mm-hmm. I think right now, particularly in South Africa, I've been speaking with one of my favorite people, Danny Bala, about the kind of climate that we're in as activists, as people who are interested in social justice, people that are talking about feminism, people that are talking about race or sexuality or issues of justice pertaining to those things, that I think that there's a kind of culture that a lot of people doing this work are experiencing a very intense backlash, either in online spaces or in personal spaces and interpersonal relations as well. And I think that what that does is promotes a culture of fear and intimidation, that very much I feel, tries to silence people that are trying to speak up about things, and speak up about the injustices that they see everywhere. But when either on Twitter that you see a kind of cyberbullying happening over there and this kind of mob mentality, both in sort of oppressive spaces as well as within communities, it becomes very difficult to want to speak, and then you self-edit yourself a lot of the time. I know I do that, and I don't ever want to contribute to an environment that's like that. So I think treading carefully is something that I'm struggling with right now, but also coupling that careful treading with the understanding that we can't stay silent anymore. It would be irresponsible to not speak up about the things that we see and the things that we want to see in the world that we want and that we deserve. So I think speaking helps.
In which way do you consider the concept that Emma Talks provides to women and marginalized individuals helpful to overcome those obstacles? Like, how did it help you personally?
I think that Emma and the team that puts Emma Talks together, and I was lucky, so lucky, and so filled with gratitude to also share the stage with Sarah Hunt, who's this amazing Indigenous feminist scholar and writer and educator and thinker. And I think that platforms like Emma give people like us a voice, and not just a voice, but a powerful voice for us, and space to tell our own stories the way that we want to, and give us. It's so rare to find a platform in which our women, marginalized identities, anybody who's, you know, have space to tell things the way that we see it, and to talk about and tell our own stories. So Emma helped me and is continuing to help me, because it shows me that first and foremost there's a hunger for these stories, that the people that want to listen, but also that so much change can happen by organizing things like this. And I think Emma is shining a very bright light and a bright example of how to do things about hosting events, but also coupling it with mutual aid and donating to community projects that are close to the speaker's heart. And I chose to highlight Black Lives Matter here on Coast Salish territories, and it's and they're doing fantastic work as well, even though they just started, but they're already doing such amazing community work and are helmed by some of the most amazing Black women that I am very fortunate to know. Their very first event was a kind of rally outside the Vancouver Art Gallery, and then after that, very recently, had a picnic, a sort of outdoor event. And I think mostly it's just to provide a space to uplift Black people that are living here on Coast Salish territories, give them opportunities to align themselves and offer solidarity to Indigenous communities here, and I hope in the future to give further forums of discussion and dialogue and opportunities to kind of get people involved in social justice here on these territories, because there's so much to do.
Going back to Emma Talks, how did you get involved with it?
So one of the organizers, Carla Bergman, I worked with her at a youth arts community center called the Purple Thistle. I met Carla through that, and performed a few times, and I was part of the youth collective over there, and met and worked alongside amazing people. And then I moved back home and got an email from her very recently asking where I was, would I be interested in doing this thing? And of course I jumped at the chance, even though I had to fly like over 16,000 kilometers to be here, but I would not hesitate. I was very fortunate that I was able to do that.
I'm going to continue with your involvement in activist initiatives at UBC. You were a student at UBC. Mm-hmm. How did the community at UBC influence you?
I think that my time here at UBC completely contributed such a huge part to how I envision myself as a person interested in and working towards social justice. While I was here, I was involved in different initiatives. I was involved or part of the founding editorial collective of The Talon, which is a really fantastic online platform that centered the voices of marginalized students on campus with amazing people. And then I was also one of the volunteers and outreach volunteer for the Sexual Assault Support Center under Ashley Bentley, and that was amazing as well, and shaped me a lot of the time about issues like activist self-care as well, and how to provide resources and support to people, particularly with such a big issue such as campus sexual assault. And I think I was an outreach volunteer when that was a very hot topic here on campus with the series of assaults that were happening and continue to happen on campus as well. And the release of documentaries like The Hunting Ground, etc., that were widening the conversation internationally as well. And even now in South Africa, there's a huge resurgence of amazing activism around sexual assault and rape on campus. I'm thinking about campuses such as the university currently known as Rhodes, at UCT with initiatives such as hashtag chapter 212 or reference lists that are popping up all over South African campuses. So I was lucky enough to kind of be sensitized to those issues while I was here at UBC. Other things like the March to Reclaim Consent, which was a similar initiative around sexual assault and awareness around consent and the importance of consent, organized by folks like Laura Fukumoto while she was here. So UBC was a very important space for me to kind of organize around things that are very, very near and dear to my heart now.
How did public response to your work evolve, and what's your favorite story about feedback to your writing?
Okay, so I have two examples. I submitted the poem that I just read, Contra, to this amazing Pan-Africanist writers collective called Jalada, and they published it, and it was really lovely that they did that. And then a few weeks later, I heard that the poem was chosen as like an editor's pick for the best poetry in that particular issue, in the language issue, and that made me very, very happy. And I got a book hamper, which is great, which is waiting for me at home, and I'm going to read that, and I'm very excited. So that was quite validating, and it's always nice and people respond very well to your work. And then I think the one that is another example, but I think is more important to me in many ways, is the way in which the people in my life support me. And they're the people with caps lock Facebook comments and the people that are sending heart eye emojis whenever I tell them that I'm doing something. And I love them dearly for that, because that kind of validation is the stuff that keeps me going when I'm deep in the throes of imposter syndrome, thinking that, oh my goodness, like, I shouldn't be doing this. I'm not at the same level as other people. I'm not that famous. I'm not famous, but well known. Or I'm just at the beginning of my journey. I haven't published that much. Can I still call myself a poet? So, you know, the tiny voices in your head. But the people in my life, all over the world, actually, that are connected to me, either online or through Skype or etc., are the ones that give me the kind of feedback that is so necessary for this kind of work. And my community holds me up in vital, vital ways, and I love them deeply for it.
It's so nice to hear that the feedback to your work is mainly positive. It's so good. Yeah, Emma Talks not only fosters voices from disadvantaged groups, but celebrates outstandingly talented individuals and their work In which way do you feel privileged as a person and or a writer?
So many. That's also a great question. I'm immensely privileged to be able to be here on these lands. I'm immensely privileged to be able to kind of communicate my message and to have people that want to listen to me, which I'm still even processing that that's something that happened and people wanted to see me and people bought, like, you bought my chapbook. That's like, wow. I think I'm privileged to be able to talk and have people listen to me, which is so important in a world that often tells Black women, especially Black queer women, that we are invisible, that our voices don't matter, that we don't exist, that we're not important, that we can't be talented or beautiful or gorgeous or silly or talented, etc. So I'm glad that there are platforms and privileged. I'm so privileged to be able to take part in an initiative that highlights us this way.
One of the featured artists at Emma Talks asked the audience members to write down their initial thoughts on the question, what is the threat that connects us? What would you say?
In my talk, I talk about in how in my language, Sesotho, you greet someone saying dumela, which means agree or consent or say yes. And that comes from when my ancestors would kind of see each other and try and recognize each other in the bush or in the wilderness, etc. And how even the way that we greet each other right now affirms our humanity and saying, well, agree that you're a human being out there. And you say, yes, I am a human being. Hello. And I think that's the thread that connects us, and that's the light that keeps me, that I keep gravitating towards people. It's that I want people to recognize my humanity and respect it, while I want to recognize and see other people's humanity and respect that, because that's what that connects all of us, every single one of us. And I think that's so important but so forgotten, because of the systems of power and domination and oppression that conceal and deny other people their humanity, their full humanity, their right to be here and to exist and to be happy. So the greeting is dumela, which means agree or say yes.
Hello, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Rachel, and this is Lady Radio, broadcasting to you live from unceded Musqueam territory from the UBC Vancouver campus. So, that was the interview that Paula had with Maneo Mohale. So, Paula.
Oh, I just wanted to mention again that the film material from the Emma Talks event on April 27th will be available online at emmatalks.org soon. So check it out.
I will do that. So following our episode, sort of moving along here from the interview, that wonderful interview with Maneo Mohale, we're going to feature some more artists, some female singer-songwriters, that we enjoy and that we wanted to share their work with you. So the first two artists that I chose, these are Canadian female singer-songwriters. And the first one is Basia Bulat. You may have heard her being played at other shows around the station. She's quite popular. So the first song we're going to play is La La Lai from Good Advice, her album. And followed by that, we have Laura Sauvage. I hope I'm saying that right. She's from Montreal, so it might be very French and I'm saying it completely wrong, but that's okay.
No, you're good.
I'm good, according to Paula. And that song is Have You Heard the Good News? So, without further ado, Basia Bulat and Laura Sauvage.
pretend I know you. I see this in your life. I see you in a vest, showing off your chest to your wife. Why your grandmother prays on her knees with a scratch ticket, hoping she'll make it. Tonight, three doors she knocked on today.
Food Bank. Your access to money during the studies at UBC will most likely be limited, but it is a priority of the AMS Food Bank to ensure your access to food is not. The AMS Food Bank provides emergency food relief 7 days a week for all UBC students. To volunteer with the Food Bank or for inquiries about how to take advantage of the services provided, contact them at foodbank@ams.ubc.ca. For more information, find the AMS Food Bank on Facebook or feel free to visit anytime across from the Wellness Center and Sprouts.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news, as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Hello, you're listening to Lady Radio. I'm Rachel, and I hope you enjoyed those songs by Basia Bulat and Laura Sauvage.
For those who don't speak French, Sauvage actually means wild.
She's wild.
Yeah,
I think from listening to her song, we get a bit of that wildness. So today, if you've been tuning in, our episode is about ladies who write. Both Paula and I actually write on our own, and we decided to talk a little bit about our experience with writing. So when we were playing the interview with Maneo Mohale, I really identified with that those questions she raised about what goes on in her head and how she talked about in her experience, oh, I haven't written a lot yet, and am I still a poet? Am I still a writer? Am I still valid, essentially, right? And obviously I'm paraphrasing. But I think with the poetry that I write and that I use to express myself, I definitely get that sense of struggle with how it is that I can validate myself as a writer and feel like the writing that I do still matters, even if I don't necessarily publish it or show many people my writing. Because, I mean, I take my iPhone with me and I just sort of type in the notes on the go when I have these things I want to express and I write about them. And I don't know if this is just me, but I do understand that, like, for women in general, it's, like, really hard to get your writing out there. And I say that because, for example, if you know J.K. Rowling, who is the writer of the Harry Potter series, her name is Jo Rowling, but she decided to change her pen name to J.K. Rowling, so it's not very obvious that she's a woman in order for her books to sell better. So that's a very real aspect of women in writing that I think a lot of writers continue to face. What's your experience with writing, Paula?
I think you're totally right on that. I don't really feel the need to publish anything. Actually, I restarted writing when I got here to Canada like 6 months ago, and I really wanted to express myself. And, well, I do journaling and a lot of essays and just like short stories, so that's my genre. Yeah, sounds so professional. It isn't. Whatever. And I stopped writing when I got busy with like work and radio, and like I didn't feel the need anymore. But like a couple of weeks ago, I found this little notebook in my desk, and it was empty. There was only like one sentence in it, and it was about a German writer from the 50s, I think. So I was like, is that a sign? No, I don't believe in signs like that. But I started writing a letter to my parents and my sister back home in this little book. So I guess you're going to listen to the podcast, my family, now you know. It's not a surprise anymore. But well, yeah, that's what I'm writing right now. But sometimes I just feel the need to write and I want to express myself, but I don't want to publish or like show it to people.
Yeah. I have a question. For those of you who don't know, Paula is from Nuremberg, Germany, right? Is that right?
Yeah, that's okay. Right.
And so my question is, you know, being able to write in two different languages of English and German, what's that like? Do you ever find that one language allows you to express yourself better? Or what are those differences between expressing yourself in English and German?
Well, right now, I often get so frustrated about writing and talking in English because I just feel like I can't express myself properly or in the way I'm used to it, because I love words. I don't love the German language, though, but I just feel way more comfortable talking in German than in English. But I realized that sometimes I just flow in English and I can write even if they're going to pop up mistakes. And yeah, I just don't focus on it. And that's something I learned here. So yeah.
Yeah. And just being able to, it sounds like, get that message across without necessarily being too, stressing too much over the small errors that might be here and there.
I'm very perfectionist and I have to tell myself and to force myself to keep doing what I'm doing. But yeah. Works better.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely something really real and just a lived experience of any sort of creative work or writing, is that quite often people are perfectionists when they create things. If you look at artists and writers, and you know, they will come out with their work and publish it, let's say, and looking back on it, they can still point out here and there and there, like this sentence, this word, this paragraph is not exactly how I wanted it to be, and I don't see it as something that I'm necessarily proud of. And that's very interesting, and I think that keeps people improving and they keep writing that way. But it's always very hard to acknowledge and give credit to yourself for the things that you write and say, yeah, like, oh, there's some mistakes here, but it's still a very coherent piece.
That's so true. I feel you.
Yeah. So time is almost up, but we have one last song to give to you, and this song has a little bit, just a tiny little story behind it. Paula?
Well, it gets so personal for me today. Well, one of my best friends and longest friends, actually, I've known her forever. She sent me a virtual love letter, an email, and she added a link to a YouTube song. And it was this incredibly emotional and sentimental song. And I played it while I read her letter, and I was just so moved. And yeah, I'm going to send her the podcast as well. So just so she knows that I really enjoyed reading her mail. And yeah.
What's the song called, and who's the artist?
The artist is Tango with Lions, and it's a Greek songwriter.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
With her band, and the song is called In a Bar.
In a Bar. And that's exactly what it's about, right?
Oh, yeah. I really had to think of my friend, because we used to sit in bars with a glass of red wine and just talk and miss people and feel lonely, even if there are so many people around us. And that's what the song's about. So, yeah, I connect to her through this song.
Amazing. So, without further ado, Tangle with Lions, In a Bar. Thank you for listening to Lady Radio, and we'll catch you next time. Thank you.
Sirius, rhythm, machine. Now try pleasure. www.citr.ca. You win. CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Well-known pimp, narcotics king, big-time racketeer, back in full force.